I'm Annie Reese. This is Politico Dispatch. And today...
You didn't tell me you were going to ask that.
Playbook's Ryan Lizza indulges me by providing a politics end-of-year recap, high school superlative style. What would your superlative have been?
My superlative would have been...
Most likely to write Politico Playbook?
Definitely not. You know, people might have said most likely to become a muckraking journalist.
Boring, but also accurate. So, yeah, just what it sounds like. The past year in review with high school superlatives. To start, let's go with most surprising from this past year.
I'd say the insurrection. You don't really see that too much in American politics these days.
Yep.
And, you know, we're trying to keep things light with this, but like... You know, the scariest part of 2021, especially considering what it might mean going forward. And also a story that because the rest of 2021 was in some ways not that atypical, right? It was new president pushing through a legislative agenda and being blocked by the opposing party and also losing some of his popularity with the public who... have complicated views about what they want from government. That's a very normal story. It happened in 2009 with Obama. It happened at least before 9/11 in 2001 with George W. Bush. It happened with Bill Clinton in 1993. And because we were covering the day-to-day of that very normal, dominant political story, the completely unusual but just as important story of Trump consolidating his grip on the GOP by lying about what happened in 2020 often didn't get as much attention. I think that's been sort of the yin and yang of covering 2021. And, you know, long term, a good question is which of those stories is going to be more important. And I think 2022 partly will be about how those two storylines interact with each other.
Okay, now let's go to most unforgettable.
The most unforgettable story is the COVID pandemic. And for the Biden administration, I think it was just a reminder that anytime they tried to get to other parts of their agenda, the coronavirus intruded and said, you know, remember me, you know.
Yeah.
What was happening in people's day-to-day lives was the pandemic and the economic fallout from the pandemic, and was probably the biggest driver of his decline this year.
In polling.
His polling decline. And just a sort of reminder that that's in some ways what he was hired to do, was to tackle the pandemic.
This one's a little brutal. I don't think anyone would want to be this in a high school context, but... In contrast to the most unforgettable, let's go with the most forgettable.
The most forgettable story of the year is probably a guy named...
named?
Proving that it's truly forgettable. I forgot Jack Cittarelli's first name. Anyway, I'm nominating Jack Cittarelli for most forgettable, but the person that should not be forgotten, because he, as you probably forgot, is the Republican gubernatorial candidate in New Jersey who almost defeated Democrat Phil Murphy. On election night, it looked like he had won, but Murphy pulled it out. And, you know, the reason that race is so important, even though the Republican lost, is because in these off-year elections, what you're really looking at is the swing. Like, how much does the vote change from 2020 to 2021? It's a really useful predictor about what might happen in 2022. Mm-hmm. Biden carried New Jersey by 16 points.
Wow.
Murphy won, the Democratic candidate, won by 3 points. So if every race in the country next year swung 13 points in the direction of Republicans, it would be an absolute blowout across the country. The average swing across all of these races isn't quite as dramatic as 13 points, but Democrats need to get back to a lot closer to where they were in 2020 rather than 2021.
Next up, how about most determined?
definitely Joe Biden and his determination to pull out of Afghanistan.
Hmm.
You know, writing about this in Playbook, we often personalized this decision to Biden and wrote about it in a way that really captured how sure of himself on foreign policy issues Joe Biden is and how stubborn he is, especially on foreign policy, where some of his closest foreign policy advisors are much, much younger and less experienced than he is, so are not exactly peer-level people like some of the senators he worked with, but are people like Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who was a staffer, and Jake Sullivan, who runs the National Security Council. Not that he doesn't respect them, quite the opposite, but definitely has a foreign policy team where it's easy for him to see himself as the most experienced and most knowledgeable. And you do wonder if that caused him to disregard some voices in the intelligence community and elsewhere about what the fallout would look like. That story also, along with the coronavirus pandemic, polling suggests was a significant hit to Biden's popularity because it really undermined one of his core qualities, and that was competence, especially in contrast to his 2020 opponent, Donald Trump. That Afghanistan story absolutely dominated the news for weeks, and a lot of pollsters have pointed to that as an important moment where some voters who weren't 100% sure about Biden but wanted to give him a chance started to change their mind about his alleged expertise and competence.
All right, switching gears a bit, high schools can be well known for their different cliques. So let's point to what the equivalent would be in Washington. Who would you say has been the most powerful cohort politically this past year?
Absolutely, if we're just looking internally at the Democrats, and so much of politics in Washington this year was about intra-Democratic battling because their big reconciliation bill only requires Democratic votes. There was really no negotiations with Republicans on the reconciliation bill at all. So all of the interesting debate and fighting was between progressives and moderates. And two cliques emerged, especially in the House, as the most important. And that would be the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which is led by Pramila Jayapal, and the Problem Solvers, which is a bipartisan group, but on the Democratic side is run by Josh Gottheimer. And Jayapal and Gottheimer, they really came into their own. They're newer to Congress, a little bit younger, and have been criticized by some old-timers as adopting much more modern, newfangled, using the media to get what they want inside the House. Both were pretty sophisticated about going public with certain demands as legislation moved through the House. They were at odds with each other frequently because Nancy Pelosi has such a narrow margin. And every time she or the White House appeased one side, it could lead to pissing off the other side. And that was sort of the political dynamic all year.
All right, so we're nearing the end, and if we're really committing to this metaphor, which we are, I feel like we've got a crown, you know, prom royalty. So who's it going to be? Our homecoming or prom king and queen? I feel like it's got to be Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, right? They've taken up a lot of oxygen this year in various negotiations.
I think so. At the risk of using, you know, any kind of outdated gendered language, they certainly have to be the king and the queen. Manchin and Sinema became household names and drove the legislative process, drove news cycles with every single utterance, and by far were the two most powerful players in the Senate, to the point where I think, you know, a lot of critics watching the process believe it made Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer look very weak, right? Mm. A lot of weeks, we heard a lot more from Manchin and Sinema and dissected what they wanted out of the Biden legislative package than we did from the president himself. Mm. And, you know, the White House has a pretty low-key media strategy for the president compared to previous presidents. I mean, compared to Trump.
High key.
And he would never, right? Donald Trump would never have allowed a Manchin and a Sinema to become as famous as they became, right? Mm-hmm. He would have really struggled with that.
So looking ahead to 2022, who do we think is most likely to succeed?
I'm going to go with the complete conventional wisdom, the Republicans.
a lot of people.
Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell. So it is very likely that Republicans will take back the House. It is less likely, but they still have a decent chance to also take back the Senate. And in a sense, Republicans have already succeeded in their case against Biden. Right. They've driven down his poll numbers. It's not all that difficult for them to sort of do what they've been doing, you know, in terms of making the case against Biden and reminding the public, especially independents and some of the Republicans who hated Trump and voted for Biden, but are open to voting for Republicans again if those Republicans are not like Trump. If they stick with that dynamic, and, you know, frankly, you might just call it like the Youngkin playbook, they're going to win in a lot of places next year. But what could still ruin it for Republicans is the fringe. And the battle between the two parties right now is an effort by each side to define the other by its fringe. And that's the thing that Republicans talk about and worry about, you know, the Boberts and the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the party, and frankly, Donald Trump himself in certain places, scuttling their glide path to taking back Congress.
Scuttling their glide path. Ryan Lizza, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Annie.
Today's episode of Politico Dispatch included music composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. I'm Annie Reese. Thanks so much for listening.